Welcome to the Traditional Knowledge Podcast, where today I'm interviewing Melanie Bennett, principal of Elijah Smith Elementary School in Whitehorse, Yukon Territory, and member of Tronic Gwich'in First Nation. Hey, Melanie, would you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Melanie Bennett. I am a member of the Tronic Gwich'in First Nation, which is out of Dawson City, Yukon. I am the great-granddaughter of Mary McLeod and the granddaughter of Alice Titus. I'm Wolf, and my English name is Melanie Bennett, but my traditional name is Jagir.
Thank you. In your mind, Melanie, could you describe what is traditional knowledge?
Traditional knowledge for myself as a First Nations person is what has been passed down for generations in a millennia within our families and our clan systems. More recently, traditional knowledge for me is the concepts that my elders teach me and guide me with. It's changing, I think, as we get more evolving into society. So I always struggle with that word. Struggle with just the traditional part of it, because my idea, my concept, my worldview of tradition is very different than the Western Euro perception of tradition. So for me, the knowledge is the teachings that come from my elders. Some of them are very, very old, and some of them are very, very new. So it's the knowledge that is passed down to me through my elders.
Okay. In your opinion, why do you think, if you do think, that traditional knowledge has been marginalized in the past?
I think it all boils back down to worldview, right? Where we come from. We all have our own traditional knowledge. Each society does. You know, myself as a First Nations person, my worldview is from that, from an Aboriginal perspective. That's what I grew up in, how I see the world, how I am represented in the world. So I think for it to be marginalized, how it has been, is the dominant society, correct? The dominant society moving in. I mean, I know our people, the Tronic Gwich'in, when the gold rush came, was the greatest effect on our people, the change of having those thousands and thousands upon come upon our traditional territory and disrupt everything. And although there was all the different things that were new to be learned and passed on, there was this misperception that our ways were not as efficient or not as good as the new ways that were coming in, and where it was just people with different worldviews, right? And for us, the Tronic Gwich'in, it was that contact of European, right? The value, because there's a misunderstanding of what the way we speak, the way we think, the way we interact is not the same as what that dominant Western Euro picture is, it's easy to say, well, that's not as good as. There's different perceptions because of our worldview. So I think the marginalization of it is exactly that, a misunderstanding, not knowing the value of each of it. The way that I was taught, the way that I was disciplined, doesn't look the same as it did for a non-First Nations person. I think that's where all of it, it's all misperception, misunderstanding is what marginalizes that worldview that I have as a First Nations person.
Okay. What do you see as the importance of incorporating traditional knowledge in student learning?
For a First Nations student, I see it important as it's that connection to their culture, to where they're from. To have that background of I belong to is very, very important as a First Nations person. To a non-First Nation, to have that type of information will build upon not having those misperceptions, not having those misunderstandings that lead into a lot of the problems that we have within schools, social problems, academic problems, all kinds of things. If both understand, then it's a big difference between acceptance and tolerance, right? I can accept what you do, I can accept what you do, I can tolerate what you do, I can tolerate, but that doesn't mean I understand it. And I think I'd, as a First Nations person, I'd rather be understood than tolerated. So having that traditional knowledge for everybody to have understanding of it can only build, you know, good relationships.
Do you believe that there is an increasing acceptance of the role of traditional knowledge in the conventional classroom?
I thought about this one quite a bit. I think that there is still an interest in it, but I also think that there is still an unsteady nervousness of it, because it's really, really difficult to say, I want to learn about something else, I want to step in someone else's shoes, learn about their worldview, learn about their culture, their life, and still maintain the integrity of my own. That requires a duality that I think for myself as a First Nations person in this position as a principal, I have had to learn in a public school how to walk in both worlds. And it's a skill that has to be developed over years. So it can't happen in what we look at as the one calendar year of school. In our 10-month calendar, all of a sudden, you have an educator or a person that's going to be fluent. It takes a long-term relationship. It takes a long-term commitment. And it takes risk-taking. Just like I had to do, you know, to learn outside of what I grew up in, within my culture as a First Nation, to be able to go to university, to be able to go through high school and graduate even, took skill that, you know, it was direct teaching from my grandmother, but it was direct teaching also from my father, saying this is the way that you, that it's done this way. I think it's even in our language. I grew up speaking a cultural English. It's not the same in school. In school, we learn standard English. I had to learn how to maneuver between the two, from my father teaching me to my grandmother teaching me and my mother, going back and forth. So I think as educators, we have to do the same, but we also have to teach the kids to do the same. The First Nations students that I see that are successful are the ones that can maneuver back and forth between the two worlds and say, right now I have to do it this way because this is where I am, and right now I have to do it this way because I'm actually in class and this is the expected. That's a skill that is taught, developed, and worked on throughout your life. I'm still developing it now as a principal. I got to learn how to work with those administrators, which is sometimes very different, right? So I think it's hugely important, but it also has to be identified that there is an uncomfortability when you have to initially start off and acknowledge it and say, you know what, this is not how I know, what this is not what I know, it's not what I've learned, but I'm willing to try. And that also means on the other side of it, you know, as First Nations people, when you have someone come across and say, I would like to learn about you, we have to be accepting, we have to be understanding, we have to learn as well that that person is going to make mistakes just like I made mistakes, and build upon them, right? Learn from them. It's not perfect. I think the key, though, is the long term. It has to be a long term relationship, not it doesn't totally match our 10-month calendar that we expect each year, especially for our students.
So that leads well into the next question of how some strategies that can be used by teachers to incorporate or promote traditional knowledge in the classroom.
First part is I always change it. We all hear about reading, writing, and arithmetic. Well, that fourth R actually is the first R when it comes to that, which is relationship. Nothing's going to happen until you have a relationship. And it's not going to happen in 30 days. You know, we get our kids, they come into our class, and all of a sudden you have to assess them, do all these things within the parameters of public education. And it's expected that, you know, after a month and a half, the kids are going to have a relationship. Sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes it doesn't happen for a couple of years. I've had the blessing of being able to work in both the public education and in First Nations schools and walk back and forth between those two. So my background knowledge that I bring into it is very different than what I see in the what I call a public school. First Nations schools, a lot of them, their philosophy is that we can't just think that because they've come to us for kindergarten or grade one that we're going to be, you know, they're going to be totally accepting of us and understanding and love coming here all the time because they're our students. That's not a given. It's based on a relationship that you have to develop with that child. And that child has to develop the relationship with you. And it takes time. It also works on the bigger perspective with the First Nation. The school I'm currently working in now with Elijah Smith has a very intricate relationship with the Kwanlin Dun First Nation. But they've had a principal here for the past 15 years, and I'm stepping in this year as someone, although I grew up in the Yukon, I'm Trondukachin, I'm from Dawson City, I have a different relationship with the Kwanlin Dun First Nation. And I now have to change that and build upon it and acknowledge the fact that it's in its infancy and work from there and accept it. It's not perfect.
Could you give some advice for a non-First Nations teacher on strategies that they could use?
Strategies, first one would be patient, right? Be brave. My favorite is listen. I see a lot of educators that they go, well, I want to know lots about First Nations. I want to incorporate it into my classroom. But they're always just waiting to speak. They don't listen. You have to stop. Listen. Sometimes it comes in different ways. I can give an example that I led a group, a drumming and dancing group at my previous school that I had to let go of. And when I went home to my First Nation this summer, I take great pride when we go to our gatherings, which happen every couple of years, that we get to dance and sing. And I had brought all my regalia. I was completely ready, very excited. I was in a new chapter of my life, so I was extremely excited about dancing and singing and on my traditional territory. And it was about 2 hours before we were supposed to do our first opening ceremony, I was told by my elders that I wasn't allowed to sing, and I had to not dance with the group. And I thought at first I was being disciplined, and I felt terrible because I take all my guidance from my elders. But I did what they asked of me. For the weekend, I sat and I watched, and I watched every drummers and dancers perform, all the different performers come out. I listened to them all sing, but the most important to me was our own Han singers. And I sat there, you know, very edgy and wanting to be up there and trying to figure it out. And it wasn't until the end that I really understood. It wasn't that I was being disciplined. It was that I was being taught to listen. Because I was moving into a new chapter in my life. My First Nations elders wanted me to know that sometimes you have to step back from the perspective of always having the answer and quiet your mouth and watch and listen so that you know. And they let me know at the end that you're going to be stepping into this new role, you need to listen. And I think that's the key thing for all of it, with our students, when you're working with people, our parents out in the community. Don't just wait to speak. Listen to them. Sometimes it comes in different ways than what our worldview is. I've watched elders talk with some of teachers, and the teacher doesn't quite understand, but I do. So I think for us as First Nations, it's incumbent that we step up and say, do you understand what that elder was explaining to you? It also works with our children. Sometimes our children say things, and because we have a different worldview, we don't perceive it the same way. I had a student in here who was having a really tough day, and it was perceived as an absolute misbehavior, was not listening in class, needed to be disciplined. When I watched the student, I went, this has nothing to do with behavior, but has everything to do with the fact that the student was just a little bit hungry and a little bit frustrated. So if I listen to them, they're going to give you that answer. So I think that's the first part. The other part is be a little bit willing to take risks. You do have to take that risk of saying, I'm doing something new. You're going to make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. And risk-taking is important on both sides. I think there are some students that come to school and that's a risk for them every day, but they still come, right? It's not just because it's mandated in Canada, they come, right? You sometimes have to be in that uncomfortable zone in order for us to grow and develop as educators. And I think it's the same for the kids. When they're learning, there is that uncomfortable zone for them because they don't know. And if we're giving them the right ideas and the right path and saying, this is what I want you to learn, and they get that understanding of that, it removes that uncomfortable, I'm in a risk place, and I can do that. And again, that all goes back to the relationship piece. The other part that's very important, I think, for First Nations is that, and I think this is what breeds the uncomfortableness and the not as much willing for educators to take those risks, is that we always hear about protocols. And I, in my own head, have to clearly state, okay, what's the protocol that I have to follow here as well? I'm not on my traditional territory. I'm in the process of developing a different relationship with Kwanlin Dun. I do have to learn what their protocols are. So I'm not afraid to ask a question, but I also know that I have to be respectful and mindful of when I'm going to ask those questions, what those questions will be, so that I can learn. It's really important to just take the time to say, okay, I'm the learner here, because when you're an educator, everybody's looking to you, how do I do this, what's the answers, and all that guidance. But when you're one that has to learn about another worldview so that you can integrate and bring those children from that worldview into your classroom, you're also a learner. And it's okay to make mistakes. It's the same for the kids. We need to teach that to the kids. If we don't directly teach them, I know in UConn we have all these different great, they call it cultural inclusion, different activities that we can put into the schools in that. But do we actually, are we just providing an activity, or are we actually directly teaching the children, this is a different worldview, this is where it comes from, it's another culture, this is why it works that way, and how can we learn from it? Asking all those really good questions. How can we learn from it doesn't mean, how does it fit into my worldview? That's a very significant point, I think, that at any educator that's stepping into learning about it, is it's not about how do I fit it into my own. It's about how do I learn so that I can be part of that, yet still honor my own. So if I was not a First Nations person and I was going into a First Nations community, I'm not from here, but I'm not going to take your concepts and say, okay, that works for me because I can do it this way. I'm going to accept it because that's the way that you do it, and I'm going to do it with you. And it would be the other way around as well. So
I think in the Western traditional education system, we tend to try to fit this in, and that's an important point that you bring up there. Do you think that there's some benefit to that conventional classroom, that Western education system, to incorporate or to use traditional knowledge to make it more holistic, experiential, and sustainable?
Definitely. Absolutely, definitely. Actually, I had an elder I was sitting with in the summertime that he said to me, our tradition is not disappearing. He said, people, you always hear them saying, we as First Nations people, our culture is dying, our language is our culture, and it's disappearing. He said, it's not. It's changing with the way that society has changed. We had an elder, a chief, that took our songs when the gold rush came and just about wiped out our people with all kinds of things, disease, all the different concepts being changed, taking over parts of our traditional territory. He took our songs and he said, we need to go and preserve them. Not because it's something just of the sanctimony of it's our songs, that is part of our culture, but he identified with it that there would be people that would lose it, right? They have come back to us since 1996 when we became a self-governing nation, But if we didn't have the use of technology with it, they would have been completely lost. If we didn't have all those things that we didn't have way back then, we weren't going down to Eagle, Alaska in the winter by dog team or over the mountains in the summer hiking it. We actually went down in a really high-tech boat and met with the elder and recorded them, right? If we didn't have that stuff, we wouldn't have that information now. So I think that's a huge part of maintaining our traditions. We have the technology now, and our elder is right. It's not that we're losing it, it's changing, and it's changing with what we have to in society. I was recently out as part of my master's, learning from a First Nations schools, and Amiskwichi Academy was one in Edmonton that prided themselves on being able to develop responsible First Nations citizens who were globally competent in technology. And I thought, wow, what a great statement to say, because that is it, right? It's about how can I use that part of the language that I learned for Han, because I'm 500 miles away from my home territory and we have very few fluent speakers left, is done through First Voices. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't be able to maintain learning it, and it would be disappearing on it. The lessons that come with it, that are done intricately with an elder, that are very different than what you get from learning it on a computer, that's the if you want to call it traditional part of it, that it has to be maintained. That story has to come down with it. That part is important. It's just as important, but there is the change in our society where we have so much out there that we could be using. I recorded one of my elders this summer with an iPad so that I could see exactly how she did something. And now I can, when I'm doing it, I'm going, oh, I can't quite remember. I can go back to that recording. So I think that part of it is important. It's also a connector. Our kids, compared to even when I grew up, and I'm not that old, the technology now is incredible. And are we powering kids up or powering them down when we come to school? Like I know kids in grade 2 that are more fluent on a cell phone than I am. And iPods, you know, they can come and do all kinds of things. Well, I'd rather tap into that so that it can bring them understanding or that connection of who they are. When I see students at our school here, you know, they're on the internet researching what their clan is and what that means to them, and creating different presentations with it, and that's completely technology based. The graphic arts that they were doing when I went to Amiskwichi was amazing. All of that is made possible by technology, so I think it's nothing but a tool that would benefit all of us, and we do have to change with the changing society of our students. I think for myself, I am a very traditional person, but I also am very modern, because I like to go around and find out about technology and utilize it. It doesn't mean that when I'm out in the bush with my elders, I'm going to whip out my, you know, iPod to do something with them. When I'm out there, I have a different venue that I'm working in. Yes, those are all lessons that are hugely important. But in order to be functioning in society so that I can provide things for my First Nation, for myself, for my students, for my family, it's important that I know how to be very divergent in being able to maintain who I am, but stay current with everything that is happening in society. Yeah.
Well, I think that answers all my questions. You've gone above and beyond, and it's a real honor to hear some of your insights, so I appreciate that very much. Do you have anything else that you want to add?
No. I look forward to seeing your project.
Thanks very much for doing this.